Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning. This is Doug Field, the CEO of the Institute of Healthcare Consumerism, and welcome to the final show of 2015 of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. We're pleased to have you all with us just prior to this busy holiday season. And joining me in studio is our co-host. We've got a full house today. All my co-hosts are here. Andrew Dietz, our Chief Marketing Officer. Morning, Andrew.
Hi there.
Ron Bachman, Chairman of our Advisory Board. Morning, Ron.
Good morning.
And our radio producer, Jonathan Field. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning.
It's a great day here in Georgia. It's not like a Christmas day. It's a little cooler.
A little cooler than the 70-degree temperatures we've been having. It's been wonderful.
Anyway, we got a great program, and we're going to spend some time today kind of reflecting on the year 2015, both from an IHC point of view and market point of view, and take a look ahead to what's coming not only within the IHC in 2016, but where we see the industry going. But great guest today. You know, we're going to open up the program in a little bit with Peter Moore, CEO of Taylor Well, who is actually building and developing an exchange for the small market, small group market. Peter's a good guy. He's been around the industry a while, was previously with Aon Hewitt. And then we're going to switch a hat and talk about total well-being, something that we've really been talking about, not only at Forum West, but on some of the programs. And joining to lead that discussion is Emily Knoll, who leads CBIZ's national well-being solutions effort. So it'll be really interesting to have her online talking about what she sees from a national perspective happening around, you know, total well-being, not just wellness, but really total well-being, and actually what is that difference. But we can't get started without thanking some people, right, Andrew?
Yeah, and I think, you know, we can thank some people not only for their support of our show today, but for their support of Healthcare Consumerism Radio this past year. Red Brick Health is a consumer health engagement company that helps organizations create real behavior change through a fully integrated package of and program of tools and services on an open platform. They serve large self-insured employers, insurers, providers, brokers, strategic distribution partners. They've been a great partner of ours, and we really appreciate them. Visit Redbrick at redbrickhealth.com. And they also have a great health innovation blog, where they've posted some of their recent research worth checking out. And this year, we also had Withings with us as a sponsor, and we did our Withings Wellness Challenge. And I see some of us are still wearing our Withings devices.
And still tracking.
for those who are new to our show, Withings is a wearables, a smart device company that makes products for wellness, well-being. Most notably, they have beautiful watches that are fitness trackers. They track steps. They track strokes if you're swimming. Not like if you have a stroke, that'll be obvious. But strokes while...
Avoid those kinds of strokes.
Wait a minute. They track your effort while swimming. And heart rate and a range of other things. So we were thankful for Withings to participate with us this year as well.
You know, I'd like to take a little bit of time and, you know, thank not only our listeners today, but those listening on podcast too, because we have a lot of people that listen to this while they're driving, working out, et cetera. And, you know, if you're hearing this message first time, thank you very much for, you know, you make this program real, you make this program important. And all our participants that are participating on the program, thank you for, you know, having these good conversations around, you know, healthcare consumerism. Our sponsors that Andrew just talked about on the radio, but also stepping back and all you sponsors out there listening that have supported our events, that are supporting the Institute as affiliate members, you know, like Taylor Well coming online, you know, is an affiliate member. We thank you because you make the Institute relevant. You enable us to do things with our community. And to all our community, you know, listening, our employers, our brokers, advisors, the consultants, and health plans. You know, thank you for being a part of this, and we look forward to continuing this relationship in 2016. But I can't get out of the program without thanking these three guys that are with me right now, because they make not only IHC relevant, they make my job easier. And Ron Bachman.
Say more about that, Doug.
Yeah, I'll say more about that. You know, let's start with Ron. First of all, not only is he one of the premier thought leaders and really fathers of healthcare consumerism, but he's one of probably the best individuals you'll ever spend time with. And his character and what he's done with the Institute is just much appreciated, Ron. I thank you for that. And Andrew Dietz, to my right, you know, I was very fortunate to get Andrew with us. I've known him for, 25 years, right, Andrew?
Probably.
And actually, his father was a very dear friend of mine, taught me this business. And so it means a lot to have Andrew here. He's one of the leaders in really understanding not only marketing but audiences and how to create programs that really help you drive revenue and fill funnels. And a lot more than that, Andrew. I'm not trying to shorten it, but thanks for being here.
Thank you.
It's always good having one of your sons working with you, but when he's really committed – and he's driving this program, he drives our content, and he drives the educational programs, you know, for the Institute, along with Eric Lucy, that's doing a great job. Jonathan, thank you so much for all your efforts. I really appreciate it. You know, it takes a team. I think it takes a village, right? But it takes a team to make this happen. It's our community of sponsors and speakers and employers, and it's our team here that has enabled us to be where we are today and enabling us to look ahead, you know, in a lot of positive ways to where we're going to go next year. I mean, we now have four events. We feel pretty good about those four events. You know, we've got a lot of work continued to do, but I'm going to be quiet and let you guys kind of reflect a little bit on maybe 2015 and a look ahead.
Well, you know, people maybe just coming in and getting engaged with IHC may not realize that what you did was double the number of successful conferences last year. I mean, that's no easy task. You as
pretty heavy lift.
It took a big heavy lift. We had two conferences, and then last year, you didn't just add a third and then wait a year to add a fourth. You saw the market opportunities around exchanges in particular and added a lot there.
Some guy standing to the left of me called Jonathan that kind of drove me to do that.
Yeah.
He was right.
Well, you know, I'd say that you know, those are a reflection of what our market is asking for.
Yep.
More conversations about certain topics and deeper conversations about certain topics, most notably private exchanges, but not only. So, you know, yes, those are business decisions, but they're business decisions, you know, to add conference, you know, made based on what our audience needs, how it's going, and how we need to serve it. I'd also say that, you know, along those lines and adding new offerings, new ways of bringing the different parts of the healthcare consumerism market together, conferences are just one way we've been trying to do that to help accelerate this market. We've also added things like a mobile app that makes it easier for our audience to stay in touch with what's happening in this marketplace, you know, at their fingertips.
And I think Ron and other team members here are really actively involved in building out IHC University, which is we're really excited about. You know, the first basic step was getting our videos up from all our general sessions, you know, getting a lot of the industry research up. But, Ron, you might want to talk a couple minutes about that.
Well, I think it gets to, you know, meeting the market's needs. There's a lot of conferences out there, and IHC is unique in its approach to healthcare consumerism and engaging people in a high-energy, changing part of the marketplace. I think you've been on the forefront of this whole movement. I know when we started this, you would Google healthcare consumerism. You didn't get a whole lot of feedback on a Google search for that. Today, you'll find lots of, and that terminology has become very common and is reflective of the kinds of for thinking ahead as to where the market is and try to meet their needs. And people who come to these conferences now expect something new and different and staying on the leading edge. And I think the fact that the market was asking for and you met the needs for additional conferences speaks highly to the quality of the conferences you put on and the reflection of the staff that's been putting them together and making the schedules right, making it comfortable for people who show up. a lot of stuff goes on behind the scenes that people don't even know because it's handled efficiently. So, you know, congrats to you and to the entire staff for the explosion of conferences, doubling it, and to all the other services that Andrew was talking about. And what the audience probably could expect is, and that I know that you're thinking about, is what else do we do next? And there's a lot of plans. You talked about IHC University. Yes, we want to build that out. We want to have a place for learning about healthcare consumerism. We want to have a central source where people can go and find surveys that maybe others have done, but we've aggregated them. This is an aggregation, navigation, consolidation kind of a format that we've been following. Get information together, make it easy for listeners to go to the website and get quality information.
Yeah.
All that's changed. And will change as the market demands, and we got a lot of good ideas for what we do in 2016.
And you know, continue to follow us out there. You know, we want you to participate with us, whether it's online, at our events. We want to hear from you if you've got ideas and insights. And you know, part of this is continuing to redefine health. What are all the elements of healthcare consumerism, and what's important about the conversation, including wellness and well-being that we're going to talk about here
right.
here shortly, including healthcare access. So a lot to talk about, and certainly, Andy, to your point, exchanges are very topical discussion. And while exchanges took a little, you know, deep breath in 2015, 2016 is going to be a moving year in the exchanges, both small group, mid-size, and large group business, and moving that through 2018. And joining us really to talk about the small group market and the innovative things they're doing is Peter Morris, CEO of Taylorwell. Peter, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Hey, good to have you on here. Happy holidays to you.
Yeah, same to all of you guys.
Yeah. Peter, for a market that might not know you, I know you're a new affiliate member, and I thank you for that. Give us a little background on what you're doing there at Taylorwell, and on yourself as well, because I think your experience goes a long way in what's going to be driving success for Taylorwell.
Great. Well, thanks for asking. First of all, I think I'm fully caffeinated out here in Seattle, Washington. We're out here in the northwest corner. Where the weather does feel like it probably ought to be the holidays. It's getting kind of cold and wet. We're focused on the small employer end of the market, and we'll, I'm sure, get a chance to talk a little bit about that. That's been the vision for Taylorwell, and a lot of good things happening for us here as we go into 2016, serving that end of the market. I spent most of my career on the other end of the market, working with very large employers as a partner with Hewitt Associates, now part of Aon, where I was the managing partner for the Seattle and San Francisco offices. Since leaving Hewitt in 2002, I've spent most of my time working in the private equity and investing space and learned over the years that what I really enjoyed doing was building companies and building businesses and solving problems. So that's what we're doing with Taylorwell. So,
Peter, define the small market, because a lot of different definitions of small group market. Are you saying 2 to 99, 2 to 249? You know, how do you define the small group market?
Well, our the way we talk about it is 2 to 500.
Okay.
Because we do have some customers that we serve that have distributions in the 100 plus space, but where we really have a lot of strengths relative to the market is in that under 100 or even under 50 space, where it's just really hard to scale lots of small groups in an efficient way. That's where we really shine. And, you know, we serve, our customer is primarily the broker. That's our channel, although we really view the broker, the employer, the consumer, and the insurance company as our customer. We have to serve all very well.
I think that's so important because you never know where the light bulb's going off in any of these markets, I guess,
mm-hmm.
particularly small market. I mean, small employers used to just leave it all to their advisors. Today, they got to think about this too and think about, you know, driving change and what to do. So what are some of the big challenges with that small employer? There's been a lot of debate that they don't want to provide health insurance and health benefits. But talk a little bit about that and what you see and, you know, their pain points, but also the opportunities for them, particularly around an exchange model.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's still a big segment of that smaller end of the market that wants to provide health insurance. In fact, there was a great survey that came out last year, the Associated Press and the Center for Public Affairs Research published a survey, and it actually echoed some things I had heard from small employers in the market. And the first thing is that small employers want to provide health insurance simply because they believe it's the right thing to do. And now they'll go from there and talk about attracting and retaining and so on, and making sure they've got a healthy workforce. But there's a beyond a financial driver among a lot of small employers in this country. And it's a little bit different focus than, say, the startup market, where, you know, some of our famous competition is focused, where there's a, you know, more of a focus on, hey, I don't want to hassle with this stuff. You know, just give me a basic program. I don't want to see a broker. And there is a sort of a startup rapid growth segment of the small employer market that wants sort of an all-inclusive solution. But we see a big chunk of the market that still has concerns about delivering the right health insurance product at the right price.
Yeah, and I think the exchange model provides some employers that maybe aren't an opportunity to do that, because there is that tighter connection between an owner principal of a small employer than there is going upstream to even a larger midsize and larger employers. I mean, they do care about their people. They're closer to them, right?
Oh yeah, and in fact, you know, if you talk to a CEO who's got, you know, 20, 30 people out on a floor doing some work, they not only, you know, they'll talk about individuals and talk about their concern about their health and the fact that somebody's missing work because of, you know, untreated diabetes, whatever. I mean, that they know what's going on. Every person's important. And so when they get out and look at health insurance, what we've learned is, you know, they want to know what's out in the market. They want to know what's available. They want to see the products. They want to see the prices. And so part of what we've done is introduce transparency. That is a website where you can actually, as an employer, go look at the products in your market, see what's available, see what they cost, and actually model those products against the, you know, what you want to provide, how much subsidy you want to provide, and so on. So our Plan-Compare website is something we just launched here in Washington, Oregon, and we'll be rolling out in other states during 16.
Peter, it's Ron Bachman. Welcome aboard the IHC. I look forward to meeting you at the conferences, getting to know your organization and yourself a little bit more. My missions in life is solving the uninsured problem with free market solutions. And most of the uninsureds are really in that small group markets. It's the working poor that many times don't have insurance. How are you approaching that? Are you acting as just an exchange so our audience understands what your business model really is? Are you working directly with the brokers as sort of a master general agent, getting some commission from them? Are you charging a fee to the brokers? How is your business model working in that small group market?
Hey, Ron, great to meet you as well, and great question. We are we become a technology and a channel for the broker. We enable them to sell a lot more product that's meaningful to not only the employer but that underinsured employee. So we have a way to get in there and reach those people. In some cases, it might be just making sure they get to the public exchange, but in, you know, there are products that can make a lot of sense for those people that are maybe indemnity type medical products or just products that deal with some of their other financial gaps and so on. So, we become a platform for reaching the entire workforce. In fact, some of our development effort over this next year is going to be improving what we can do with those folks that maybe aren't full time, maybe don't qualify for the, you know, the full time benefits, but nonetheless, the employer wants to do something for them. And you know, our you hinted at, you know, well, how do you make money? Well, you know, there's definitely a part of our revenue that comes through admin fees and other consideration through the insurance companies and other product providers, and that's certainly an important part of our model.
Peter, how? What is the biggest challenge getting brokers on board with not just you? What is the biggest challenge with that small group broker right now and getting them to embrace an exchange model?
Well, I think the big challenge is that to serve the small end of the market really well, they've got to change their sales and business model. They our customers are using our technology in most cases to move to an inside sales approach. And this is where we use Zillow as an example of what happened in real estate. Zillow came in prior to Zillow and Redfin and some of these others. If you were trying to buy a home or any piece of real estate, you had to have an agent to see the prices in the market and to complete a transaction. That's exactly where we are in group insurance today. You got to have a broker to really know what's out there in the market. We see that changing. We see the market opening up in terms of transparency to products and prices. And then the broker really becomes, is important, but they're assisting the process. The employer can do more in terms of self-service. And then the broker can move to a call center approach where they're on the phone with the employer. They can actually, discuss and present products online, complete a deal online and on the phone. And really deliver a much more efficient, sales and service model to that small end of the market. That's the barrier. Not everybody's ready to go there, but I think those that are going to really take off and grow here are going to get there pretty quickly.
Well, I think you're in the right part of the market. I'm excited about hearing about what you're doing because the death of the broker has been a little premature for many, many years now. I used to have a license. My brother actually runs a brokerage firm here in Atlanta, one of the largest ones in the state. They're having to change their model to be more consultant, if you will, than strict broker. Mm-hmm. But the brokers have the relationships, and anybody who ever tries to cut them out, as some have tried, I think have done it at their own peril because many times, they have worked with the CEO. They had the startup. They helped the CEO's wife get coverage when she was denied. They've helped a key employee along the way. So I think the broker is not going to go away anytime soon. Those who don't want to change, actually, I see them more selling their businesses out and a little bit of consolidation with the brokers who see the future and what's going on. So I think you're in a great part of the marketplace. Just give you an example where I think, and I don't know if this is happening in other states or how steeped you are in it, but I'm sort of a political junkie as well. And January 1st of 2017, the Affordable Care Act offers up some new opportunities for what they call state innovation waivers. More technically, it's 1332 waivers that will allow states to do a number of things. In Georgia, for example, we are in the process of putting in an application effective in 2017 that would allow employers to actually contribute monies through the health reimbursement arrangement that would allow individuals to buy insurance where that's now illegal under the current HHS rules. I think if something like that happens, that individual market might open up pretty rapidly with monies from small employers being able to be used to buy individual policies. I don't know if you're strictly in a small group or whether you see the potential expansion of your services to individuals. What's your thinking along those lines?
I think that is there's so much momentum that direction that it's going to happen sooner or later. The other side of the equation is that the employee is paying so much of the total cost of insurance, not only in premiums but in copays, and it's that number is getting closer and closer to about half the total bill. You get there, and it sort of begs the question, why are employers, providing this group product? I think it's still going to make sense for a lot of employers, but I do see a transition occurring. And our platform definitely is positioned to support a hybrid model where some of the products offered to the workforce might be group, it might be group dental, vision, life, and everything else. But with a mix of individual products, which could include medical, and and so you've got to have a group chassis to run that, but you've got to have a consumer experience and be able to do some consumer transactions, and the organizations that are getting excited about what we're doing see that coming and see that potential in our technology.
Yeah, Peter, talk a little bit about look ahead to 2016. What do you see in the year ahead as it relates to the small group market? I mean, 2015 across each market segment was looked at as a year where the market kind of took a deep breath, maybe didn't move its head as rapidly as people had predicted. And I think some of that's justified. It was so crazy, the market needed to take a deep breath. But you know, we see 2016, you know, differently. How do you see it?
Well, I think there's still going to be some confusion in some, particularly in some states. You know, for example, we just found out within the last 8 weeks that the definition of small employer for community rated products in many states was supposed to jump up to 100 employees. Well, the feds came out and said, well, you can stay at 50 if you want to as a state. Many states decided to,
right.
And you know, all these products got filed assuming that they were going to go to 100. So the pricing isn't quite right in the market. So I think there's just going to be a little more, you know, confusion in among employers as they look at these products. You've got self-funded products dropping in some states below 50 employees. So I think you're going to see some settling out in 2016. 2017, I think we're going to see a big jump in community-rated rates because the risk adjustment promise is done. We're not going to see any more of that. And then I think a little more settling out in terms of, self-funding versus community-rated products and so on. So it's going to, I think technology is going to start to seep into the small end of the market. I think we're on the leading edge of that, by the way, in terms of technology that actually works in a scalable way for small employers. A lot of people have tried and aspired to get in there and really make it work, and few have really done it very well. Obviously we're excited about our opportunities to sneak into that space in 16, but I think more and more folks are going to come in so that you see better tools, particularly for brokers to use to serve small employers. That's what I think will happen. So there's just a lot going on here in this end of the market, and a lot of settling out that's going to occur.
All good opportunities. Peter, really appreciate you having on the program. Time flies when here having a good, informative, and fun conversation. I'd like to give you a chance to kind of wrap this and leave our audience with a couple takeaways.
Yeah, I think, there's a couple things I'd say. Probably the majority of small employers out there are providing health insurance are mostly concerned about the quality and cost of that insurance, and really are underserved. They're looking for some better help, and they're not looking for a complete outsourced HR solution. They kind of like some of the other things they have, like payroll and so on. They're still concerned about getting a good deal on their insurance, and that's an unmet need as we see it in the market. So they're looking for transparency. They're looking for good help. They're not necessarily going to hang out and play golf with their broker. They might just be happy to get on the phone and get some help making that decision. And I think the broker is going to move towards more of a role as an assistant or a facilitator in that process versus driving the whole process. That's a trend that we see happening right now. So those are a few things. And hey, guys, I really appreciate it. I really like the work you're doing. It's fun to be part of what you're up to. And thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you, Peter, and appreciate you being a part of what we're doing. You have a great holiday, and I'll talk to you after the first of the year.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you.
Take care.
Good stuff. Yeah. Well, I'm excited that he's working in a part of the market that obviously has been one of my interests for a long time, and finding solutions for those small employers. That's where the uninsureds are. That's where some solutions are. And some of the hardest parts of the market to penetrate, because a lot of people kind of dismiss it. And if you're a big consulting firm, they tend to want big consulting dollars from large companies. These companies are struggling to survive. They're looking for a good cost, and they've got a strong relationship in most cases with their broker. And these kinds of solutions coming forth, I think, are going to solve some of the problem. I think we still need a lot of changes to the ACA. I think we're going to see that. Like I said, some of the stuff I mentioned that we're doing here in Georgia on state waivers, other states are going to be picking up on these 1332 waivers, which is going to allow states to have more control over state health reform. You know, we're asking for things like separate risk pool for employers that are going to be in this new product line that we're suggesting. We're asking for a waiver on the what's called the the age compression. Instead of a 3-to-1 ratio on pricing, which has been forced, the natural actuarial difference between older folks and the youngest folks are 5-to-1.
Yep.
That changes the entire pricing for people by age. It makes it actually cheaper for people under age 30 to buy insurance. We're asking for a number of waivers on some of the taxes that are implemented under the ACA. We'll see if it works, but there's a lot of innovation that's going to happen in this part of the marketplace over the next couple of years.
Listen, there's a ton of companies under 100 employees.
Yes.
I mean, and here's the other factor. He mentioned it, and you mentioned another part of it. First of all, the advisor's been underestimated. Some of it deservingly so, Ron. You know, some of it because certain number of brokers had their head in the sand. Another group was just taking longer to really understand what this is. Now they're, you know, graduating from private exchange school. Jeff Yannick and Maestro said that, and he's right about that. The other element is that I think in the under 100 market, and Peter reaffirmed this too, and I've believed this from day one, is that they do have a connection with their employees.
Yeah.
And while they have economic challenges that may be a larger company, well, I'm not saying it, we all have economic challenges, but they do want to provide health benefits, health care and health benefits. And I think in exchange, the right exchange enables them to do that in a more efficient and cost-effective way than before. They don't want to get out of health insurance business unless they absolutely are forced out, you know, by other things. So I think there is a very relevant market there.
Well, the way I've described it in the past in some of these discussions we've had is it's a control issue. Who's going to control the client? And those organizations that try to take control away from the broker, I think, have failed. Those organizations that tried to create a technology platform for information and transparency to the broker and to the customer have succeeded. And so that kind of a partnership, which is where they're going here, makes a lot of sense. And I hope he's very successful.
Yep. Well, let's kind of switch hats, and you know, that's the nature of healthcare consumerism. We've got a lot of different moving parts, and all of it, you know, points towards creating a successful program. And really, a deep and ongoing discussion right now is about wellness and total well-being. And joining us to lead that discussion on this segment is Emily Knoll, National Director of CBES Well-Being Solutions. Emily, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, nice to have you on this program. You coming to us from up Maryland way?
Yep, out in Columbia, Maryland.
Is it getting to be holiday weather up in Columbia, Maryland?
It's finally dropping in temperature, so no snow yet.
I think we all had it warm for a while. Emily, I think you know, we've had a series of CBIZ executives on this program. It's great to have you here. Give our audience a background specifically on your practice, you know, the well-being solutions practice and what you guys are doing at CBIZ.
Yeah, sure. We're doing some exciting work. We've been working with clients in the well-being and wellness space for a few dozen years now, but we're kind of really ramping up our efforts to help our employers develop their strategy and take their wellness programs to the next step so that they can get some good outcomes.
Yeah, give our audience a definition of wellness and well-being. You know, what is the differentiator around well-being from what is maybe looked at as, you know, traditional wellness?
Well, well-being is certainly the buzzword today, and I'm hopeful that it's here to stay, you know, for good reasons. You know, traditionally, employer wellness programs have focused on physical health, so that includes things like promoting and improving access to preventative care screenings, exercise, nutrition, and tobacco cessation resources. And the goal really is, you know, an effort to keep healthy people healthy, but also prevent chronic conditions. And those have since evolved to address stress and depression, as well as disease management programs, such as, you know, helping employees manage conditions like asthma and heart disease. But today, more and more employers are using the term well-being to really shift their strategy to a more holistic approach,
mm-hmm.
and really get at the range of risks that are driving a range of costs employers are facing today. So when we talk about well-being, you know, we're thinking of it in the context of the way an employee feels, functions, and judges life. And that's pretty different, you know, of course, than focusing on employees' cholesterol, you know, for example. So the higher the employee's well-being, the more likely they are to function positively. But also, you know, employees with strong overall well-being are less likely to be sick and absent from work, And when employees do face a serious health issue, if they have high well-being, they're more likely to deal with pain better and recover more quickly.
You know, I think MLA makes a ton of sense. You know, I mean, taking just one of the pieces, financial wellness, I mean, it just makes all the sense in the world that needs to be focused on because, you know, to go tell somebody to run 3 miles a day if they're struggling to pay their mortgage, to pay their bills is a pretty heavy lift when they're going to go maybe across the road and eat biscuits and comfort food, you know, because they're just stressed out. So unless we help address that part of total well-being, and it's only one part, you know, we can't have really, you know, total wellness, of an individual.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good example. And we have lots of evidence that financial stress has a huge impact on employees as well as other components of well-being.
I know CBIZ, you work with all different sizes of employers. So how are the mid to large employers embracing and finding value in making the move to total well-being? What do you see out there? And does it differ? It obviously probably differs by sectors, but what are you seeing with your clients?
It's been really valuable on several fronts. Studies of showing that a positive relationship exist between well-being and health. Employee well-being is proving to be an even stronger predictor of health and performance than behavioral and physical health risks, demographics, and even healthcare utilization alone. So taken all together, an employer can really get a powerful picture of what's driving their costs and then be better able to make decisions about how to address it. You know, that may be through their plan design, their networks, their menu of benefits, and just overall improvements to the organizational culture. So, you know, through a well-being lens, you know, mid-size and large employers can really identify what the risks are and offer benefits and interventions to address a wider range of needs and priorities. And then where an employer may have narrowly addressed risk in previous years and consequently saw lower return on their investment, now employers have the ability to address a range of factors and really maximize the value that they get out of these types of programs. And then I would say even for the small groups, they are, moving to well-being. It also reinforces the importance of creating a workplace environment and culture that helps sustain these healthy habits and underscores the impact of our social relationships at work, you know, such as with our manager, that impact on health and engagement.
Emily, it's Ron Bachman here. I love what you're doing here in terms of connecting some dots and expanding and evolving, if you will, wellness to the well-being affects health and relating it to productivity and to the bottom line, if you will, of companies. I think that's ultimately a much more all-inclusive model, if you will, than just looking at, well, what's my cost of health care? It's how does it affect the whole individual and how does that individual affect the organization? Is that the big differentiator in what you're doing versus what a lot of other companies are doing in this wellness space, or are there some other areas you'd like to share with our audience that makes you so unique?
Yeah, I think, Ron, what we're doing is helping employers, you know, take a proactive approach to this, really in advancing their population health management strategies. You know, we're finding it helpful to use the terminology of well-being with employers and talk about, you know, the five key elements that drive a person's well-being. You know, traditionally those are, you know, purpose or career, relationship health, community well-being, you know, financial security, and of course, physical health, which we've been addressing for a while. But mm-hmm. we're able to then talk with them about how they can make a difference in these areas. And, you know, whether it be through surveys or other data, they can get a better idea of where their employees have strengths and then what areas are important to prioritize for improvement. So that enables us to really, I think one of the differentiators is using that type of terminology and programming to really build an engagement strategy that's going to be effective and make a big difference in the results.
Well, you know, you start off by saying wellness has been around for a while. You hope wellness and well-being, stays the focus that it's been. We here at IHC firmly believe in that, and in fact, in the conference that's coming up in Atlanta in May, we are working closely with the Atlanta Wellness Professional Group. We will probably have wellness expertise from the 40 largest companies here in Atlanta to really emphasize the point of your services and your products and how companies are implementing those ideas. We'll have, I mean, a lot of people may not know, but Atlanta is the home base of a lot of big brands, so whether it's Coca-Cola, Delta Airlines, Home Depot, Chick-fil-A, a number of other big companies are all going to be UPS.
Yeah.
Yeah, those companies will have representatives at our May meeting talking about wellness on various stages, whether it's a general session or in some workshops. So we firmly believe that you're in the right space and doing the right things and meeting a need out there that employers are really looking for and evolving around.
And Emily, one of the continued challenges in wellness and total well-being space is, you know, presenting the ROI or gaining an ROI understanding with the C-level execs, that CFO, that CEO, that some of this stuff doesn't happen overnight. You know, it takes a year or 2 years. I mean, how are you helping your clients tell that story and show the type of metrics to that C-level executives that they really can buy into and understand why they need to be doing this?
Yeah, and I expect, you know, Ron and Doug, that to be a big topic of discussion at your conference as well.
Yeah,
because
we'll be.
You know, employers are definitely struggling in that area to show a return on investment, particularly with the traditional wellness programs. And we've had a lot of success stories, and I think the good news is that we have mounting evidence that the strategic shift to well-being is producing positive results fairly quickly. You know, again, that's not overnight, of course, as you say, but I think, you know, we can adapt and modify the programs that we're offering to be more holistic, to have a bigger impact. So, you know, for an example, you know, in a study of employees with and without diabetes, we learned that well-being is a more important determinant of productivity than the presence of diabetes itself. So if we're treating the person holistically and not just the physical aspects of the disease, we can get better results. And that goes the same for employees experiencing anxiety and insomnia. You know, if we're able to identify that financial stress is a major contributing factor to that, we can provide more effective solutions.
I'm going to make an assumption here, but is there a positive assumption that can be made that a C-level executive can really grasp maybe a little bit better this total well-being, you know, story and relate to that about financial wellness, about emotional health, et cetera, then maybe they've been able to get their arms around making their, you know, whole population well. I mean, there's a common sense, business sense, you know, approach to well-being when you sit back and look at it. Is that a fair assumption to make?
Yeah, there's a common sense approach about it, and I think fundamentally they believe that happier and healthier employees are more productive and more creative and contribute to their business growth. So I think, you know, as an industry, we're working on moving beyond that, you know, general kind of feeling of, yeah, I get this, to what kind of metrics can we look at to help tell our story and show that it's having an impact.
Yeah, help us look ahead to 2016 and beyond. What do you see in this space in 2016 and beyond? What do you see happening, and what kind of initiatives are you behind that may be changing in the year ahead?
Yeah, I think some really exciting things happening, and definitely some employers innovating in this space. You know, I think in the past year, we've seen a lot of focus on compliance-related issues and wellness regulations, as well as incentives. And I think this coming year, as employers are approaching wellness efforts with more experience and better data, they will be able to make more significant progress in really building a culture of health. And so I think one of the top trends for employers will be to create and document a long-term well-being and engagement strategy. There's still about half of employers who don't have a written plan in place. So they really need to understand what they're addressing, have a goal that aligns with their business goals, and then put a written plan and strategy in place to guide those efforts. And then other trends I see happening are really, as we've been talking about, expanding the scope of the programs to address financial and other well-being priorities, looking at how we can empower employees and managers to take healthy actions, and enhancing those cultural and environmental supports, you know, that we can do through the workplace to help make, you know, the healthy choices the easy choices and help sustain behavior. And then finally, I think, you know, one of the really neat emerging trends is being able to leverage all the new health technology, you know, well-being apps and activity devices. We'll see a lot more of that, a lot more penetration in the market of activity devices and those types of technologies.
And you see gamification playing a key role here, too. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that employers are expanding the use of technology and gamification to really draw in all generations of workers. And, you know, through games and on portals and activity devices like the Garmins and so forth, and Facebook-like portals where people can really connect with each other, cheer each other on, and share their success stories.
That's great, Emily. Listen, really enjoyed having you on this program, we look to get you involved with us maybe in some of our future event programs. I think you would bring a lot of expertise and into our program, so we'll be look forward to talking to you about that. I'd like to give you an opportunity to kind of wrap this and leave our audience with a few takeaways, if you would, please.
Yeah, sure. And I appreciate you having me on. I can talk about well-being all day. but employers are really making that move, I think, from focusing on employee wellness to well-being. And I think that's exciting. And that holistic view of well-being beyond physical health will really give employers a more significant way to impact the results. I also think that, you know, some of the trends that are going to happen in 2016 will make a difference in how we engage employees. So while we not only want to engage them in programming, we want to engage them in actually changing and sustaining behavior. So the use of gamification and those types of use of technology is really going to make an impact. So we have a long way to go, but I think we can make a big difference, and we'll be doing that this year.
That's great, Emily. Let our audience know if they're listening to this either live right now or on the podcast, how they can get in contact with you about some of the information you've been discussing.
Yeah, absolutely. We have you can always reach me through my email, enoel@cbiz.com. We also have on our cbiz.com website a well-being section where people can learn more about, you know, the steps of an effective wellness program and sign up for things like our monthly Wellbeing Insights newsletter, which has been a really popular resource. So lots of ways to contact and be happy to help in any way.
Great. Emily, thank you so much. Listen, have a very happy holiday and a great new year, and we look forward to talking again the first of the year.
Sounds great. Thanks very much.
Take care. Great discussion. I mean, you know, from, you know, Andrew said it earlier, I mean, part of our goal is to engage people and create discussions and conversations, and, you know, where wellness is redefining itself with the well-being piece and where technology is playing a role there. You know, we talked about the small group market and exchanges. Last week, Jeff Yonaga talked about the mid-market and what's happening. You know, we've had large group discussions, healthcare access. It's just a tremendous number of moving parts, and it's good stuff. I mean, there's a lot of good things happening.
Yeah, what's exciting to me about the presentation we just heard is how wellness is expanding and evolving. I love the idea she had five major points and areas that they're developing out. I've always thought, which I think somewhat parallels her five, that the four major points of human existence are physical, mental, social, and spiritual. And in the normal wellness, we focus a lot on the physical, and I think we're starting to see a lot more emphasis on the mental with the stress and depression and how
it
they're connected.
It makes sense, doesn't it, though, Ron?
Right.
I mean, like, it makes sense.
Absolutely.
You can't say you're well if you're not well emotionally and financially, et cetera, or
right,
helping you get well and helping you, you know, gain an understanding, or if you've got an addiction problem, all that, you know.
It all fits together, so yeah. You get down in, you know, what she's bringing out is a lot more activity that she's saying is developing, that they're seeing in the community part. So the physical, mental, social, the social part, the community activities, that's finance and other ways that you deal with the community around you. I would say that, and they may have some things going on. I think the other area is spiritual. It's not religious, so we don't have to get into that kind of thing. But that there's something better than you. That you lay out a plan. That you know that there's
all part of total well-being.
It's
all total.
So it's exciting to see it all develop. It really is. It's fascinating because we've seen it grow now over a number of years in areas where you think, well, okay, we know what wellness is. It's been around for a long time. No, we really don't. Because employers continue to experiment, vendors out there, solution providers continue to offer new services, and make those logical connections. So,
and that's a nice segue into, we've opened up registration for Atlanta, which is our big forum that will be held in May, and wellness and well-being is a big part of that.
That'd be a centerpiece of that.
And now you can go to the IHC. See forum website, and you can register $99 Super Saver rate. Check it out. At the same time, our private exchange forum, our deadline's coming up. What, Jonathan? 12/31, right? For our $99 Super Saver rate.
Yeah, that's right.
So you can go privateexchangeforum.com, same site. Check out the discussions we'll be having at private exchange forum, the speakers we have there. If you've got speaker ideas for Atlanta, we're very open to that right now. So great opportunity for you when you're in your pajamas over the holidays, having your cup of coffee, you're waiting for your kids to wake up, trying to find a piece somewhere, or having your glass of wine at night or a Coke Zero, come to our website and check it out.
And get certified as a healthcare consumer specialist,
Great time to get certified. You can do it all online.
Do it all online. And that way you can show, if you're in a corporate environment, show your bosses that you've got a certain level of expertise and you've been certified. As you move forward in this whole space, if you're a broker out there, you get certified so your customers know you're special and different in working in this space that everybody's moving towards.
They can find that, Ron, on the IHCC site.
Right. You've got a discount for that, right?
We do. We have an end-of-year program, 30% discount on the test, $99 to get entrance to the IHC University. So very cost-effective, and go check it out. And like I urge everyone, sign up and take the test, see how you do, and then go back and you study it. I think you'll see how deep and wide the certification program is and how valuable it can be to you, whether you're an employer or a broker, solution provider, et cetera.
And we got videos they can watch. So, if they haven't been able to come to one of the conferences or to the pre-con that we put on specifically targeting us, we have videos online so that you can watch the video of those conference presentations on the consumerism certification program. So you get all that background there, written material, video material, and then take a test.
Exactly. Well, to our audience that's with us today, thank you so much. We will be back here January 15th in the new year. And I wish everyone a happy holiday, a Merry Christmas, a great new year, and let's have a great new year together in 2016.
Merry Christmas.
Take care, everyone.